This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 453 in the series. This shares my conversation with Town Council Chair Tom Mercer. This is one of the series of our quarterbacking sessions, meant to provide a recap of the prior Town Council meeting, akin to one of the many sports post-game analysis broadcasts we're all familiar with here in New England. This will be a discussion focused on the Town Council meeting from Wednesday, February 3rd, okay, what just happened? What does it mean for Franklin residents and taxpayers? Tom and I get into the discussion. The show notes include links to the meeting agenda and associated documents. Our conversation runs about 38 minutes, so let's listen in. All right, Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, anywhere on the internet at WFPR.FM, and here in the local Franklin area, old-fashioned radio dial at 102.9. Today, another town council quarterbacking session with our town council chair, Tom Mercer. Tom, thank you for taking time this morning.
Well, thank you, Steve, for having me. These quarterbacking sessions are a good outlet, a good way for people to get kind of a short recap of what sometimes can be a lengthy council meeting.
Not quite 3 hours last night. If people went through it, they know we're going to talk about. But if they didn't, okay, what just happened? What does it mean for the Franklin residents and taxpayers? And that's effectively what we want to try and get to in, you know, shorter than the 3 hour time period you spent last night with.
Exactly.
So there was a whole bunch of detail, and obviously some more conversations can come from that, but the finance department, Kerry Bertone, Chris Sandini, presented some great data and gave us a good picture of where we are, you know, from a financial, fiscal stability, fiscal management. A lot of good points made during that presentation.
Without question. And, you know, probably one of the most important pieces is the fact that the town has is currently sitting with a bond rating of AA+, which is one short of perfect.
One short of perfect.
And, you know, very few towns are perfect. We've been AA+ for a while now. We continue, I applaud the efforts of our administration, as well as our finance department, our treasurer, Kerry and Chris do a great job of managing this. And some of the things that came up during our conversation was, you know, where are we with our current debt, whether it be the exclusionary debt versus the regular debt?
Yeah, let's develop that a little bit more, because that's a clear distinction in the two terms, exclusionary debt versus non-exclusionary debt. Exclusionary is where we as voters have explicitly authorized a debt exclusion, generally for a school.
Exactly. And it's generally for capital projects.
Right.
And basically, you know, as we all know, schools has been a big part of that.
Right.
And the part of a debt exclusion that a lot of people know, but a lot of people don't know, is when they vote a debt exclusion, there's a beginning, but there's an end.
Yes.
And that's the most important piece of a debt exclusion versus what we all know is the big O word, the override, which an override lasts forever, where a debt exclusion has an end.
Yeah, whether it's 20 or 25 years, that debt period will then roll off, and however much it, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 bucks, whatever it is, will drop off.
That's right. That's right. And it decreases as the years go on. Usually in a debt exclusion, you're at the peak, and the 4 to 8 year period is kind of where you cap out, especially with the school, where, you know, your tax based upon how we borrow it as the project builds. Mm-hmm. They don't always, we sometimes borrow in bands. And, that, again, confuses people. What's a band?
Right.
Well, if you look at it as a Band-Aid, because basically what it's doing is just holding things till you get to this point where you need to bond the project or complete mm-hmm. the project. So basically what happens is with a band, your temporary borrowing in incremental increments till you get to where you're going to bond the entire project.
Right.
So it might be the fourth year into a project where you might start to cap the highest numbers per homeowner that you would see. So that 4 to 8 year period, then it decreases. So by the time you get to the end of a debt exclusion, you know, you may be, and people here like Remington Jefferson coming off or Keller Sullivan coming off the tax base. By the time they come off, what you may be looking at is somewhere between 75 and to the average homeowner, $35 to $75 is basically what you're looking at the end of the debt exclusion.
Right.
And the good news for our community is in the next 9 years, basically, as we sit here today, mm-hmm. Most all of the debt exclusions we have, other than the high school, will be coming off.
Right.
And people don't always understand that, you know, by the time we get there, I'm sure there'll be another for something, some need, whatever it is, whether mm-hmm. it's a building, a school, or whatever the case may be.
Right.
But the good news is in the next 9 years, everything but the high school will be off. Yeah. And at that point in time, the high school will be on a downward swing, and that will be reducing annually.
So the comparison, and for the residents, taxpayers who are listening, it's more akin to kind of the home mortgage piece. Clearly you're paying principal and interest from a home mortgage perspective. And obviously over time, as the principal starts dropping, theoretically your interest should be starting to drop it along the way. So that's going to go. When the bond for that particular Keller Sullivan, Horace Mann Oak, et cetera, falls off, we don't necessarily always see the full benefit of that. We see the benefit of it, but right. because of the other tax rate setting pieces, there may still be that 2.5% increase up to anyway.
Exactly.
So we may only see part of it. There's still a netting effect. We don't necessarily exactly. see it all go out. So it's kind of hard right. to see.
Yeah, it is hard to see. And, it's really in the big drops that you see it. But for example, the high school, we peaked we're peaking pretty close.
Peaking right about now, I guess.
Right about now. And then you'll start to see decreases going forward.
Mm-hmm.
But it can get confusing.
It can. Sure. And I think the other key piece, obviously, people can dig into more details. Certainly, there's more pieces of info in last night's meeting. The document was shared at the meeting. It wasn't in advance, but it's still on the website. So people go look at it. We can also share that the FinCom meeting agenda also should cover this as well. So people, if they missed that, can do more. But I think the other key takeaway is, to the extent that we are at the AA+, and that's a reflection both of the town finances, the fiscal integrity, the fiscal management, not just of the current administration, but to the town council and prior councils, because this is developed over a period of time.
Correct.
And that's similar to the rating agencies. So whether it's Equifax or whoever, who rates you on the 200 to 800 for your, you know, capability and what your, I'm losing the term. the equivalent rating agencies that says, oh, Steve's a good risk factor. He's been paying all his debts. And thereby it would be closer to the 800. If you haven't been paying your debts, you're going to be down in the 200, 300 range until you build up that credibility. That's what I was trying to say.
Okay. So, and you're 100% correct. And as you look at a double A plus, you're talking about, if you were comparing it, you'd be in the 800 range, with that, if you compared it to what you might be as an individual,
right?
You know, but you know, we're dealing with two, as we just said earlier, we're dealing with two different types of debt. We have the exempt debt, and then we have the regular debt. And just to give people an idea, on the exempt or exclusionary debt,
non-exclusionary,
But on the exclusionary, Horace Mann comes off in 24.
Right.
Keller Sullivan comes off in 26. The second part of Horace Mann comes off in 27. And the high school is 39 and 40. But those are the four biggest. Yeah. And as far as the current, the regular debt, current projects, you know, the finance committee supported $15 million in new authorization and borrowing, which is really a five-year plan, critical plan for buildings, and what we anticipate we're going to need over the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got the municipal building. We know all the windows need to be replaced in that
building.
It's been
on the capital wish list for a while, so we might as well get to it.
Yeah, exactly. Technology, that's always changing, so that's always going to be there. Sidewalks. Then you have general school updates that are needed. Roofs, HVAC systems, things along those lines that really you wouldn't put out a debt exclusion on, but come under capital projects or what is general fund or regular debt. And then we have the recycling center. We know, you know, there's a, that's probably a $5 million fix. We know that's not far behind. And then, you know, you're always looking at open space, recreational investments, public infrastructure, pretty much the whole gambit there.
Yeah. So to the Beaver Street Recycling Center, and I believe that one's also tied into the land swap that we were negotiating between the state and the town, et cetera. So we need that to kind of happen, and then we can do the work we need to. But I think the other key point from, and again, the comparison to, you know, a homeowner's budget, you've got a mortgage, maybe you've got a second mortgage or a line of equity, et cetera. It's kind of that line of equity equivalent. So we've built within the town budget up to 3.5% to pay interest on this other stuff. And we've done an awful lot with it. The fire stations, the senior center, much of the library. As long as we have capacity within that, we can do more. And I think one of the clarifications was it's not so much project by project. It's really the dollars that are associated with the project because of that interest cost associated with it as well.
Exactly. And that's not to mention, as you quickly mentioned, the Beaver Street Interceptor, we know that's coming. Five-year water main replacement plan, water treatment plan. So these are all projects that we know are coming and we're preparing for it as we, and you know, it's like it, you are as an individual, you need to have some debt because that's how you get the ratings.
Right.
So you try and pick and choose the right time to do that. And obviously with interest rates being what they are, now is a good time if the council deems it necessary that we need to, and what we're looking at here is a $15 million borrow. And those are all good things. It only helps the town in the long run.
Absolutely. Because I think the other piece is it's never one and done. I mean, as a homeowner, you've always got something to do. You may be paying the mortgage, et cetera, but there's always something little, whether it's the faucet here, the window here, the storm drain there. And thereby the town is a larger operation. However many buildings we have, we got 200 miles of roads. We got a dozen schools. All of those require maintenance. And some of those we can cover from the operational piece, but some of those take, you know, kind of the home equity equivalent, which is kind of the debt band we use as well.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, probably the biggest piece that we have looking for, ahead is the interceptor. That's a big nut. It's been one that's been coming, and it's a, you know, unfortunately, it's an accident waiting to happen.
Yes. Yeah. We've covered that in prior sessions.
Yeah.
We've covered
exactly.
That with Jamie.
Yeah.
We want to, that one's moving. We want to keep moving. We don't know the final cost, but it's right. Going to be more manageable than if it suddenly breaks tomorrow.
Exactly. And we're looking to get that in the next 6 to 8 months, be well on our way with that project. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And we can segue from kind of the sewer side of that to stormwater in Brutus's triad. You know, you got stormwater, wastewater, and, you know, drinking water. Stormwater, the discussion is now getting at a more detailed level within the council. Clearly, there was a subcommittee, ad hoc committee, effectively, that did some preliminary work. Now that's still getting worked out as the council discusses.
It is. It's a difficult it's a difficult project process that we have to go through here. And I think the subcommittee has done a wonderful job in preparing a presentation that's been done on Franklin Radio. It's been done Franklin TV. And, you know, just prior to COVID, we had a bunch of sessions that were pretty well attended at the time, in spite of it being COVID. And I think it's an educational process, and it's very hard to get the facts to the public. And I say that not in a mean way. I say it because not everybody tunes into the council. Mm. Not everybody tunes into the radio. Not everybody tunes into the TV. So there's information out there, and not all of it is factual information. And I just would ask the taxpayers to investigate, do some investigating. Go back to the links, the TV links, the presentations that are on the website that they can go to and read about it and try and get the gist of what's going on here. And in a very short summary, it's a piece that it's an unfunded mandate by the federal government. And we've been fighting it for 4 years. We sued the federal government, the EPA, for forcing this on us, and we lost. And so we're in a situation now where it's costing us roughly $1.2 million annually to continue to improve our stormwater protection. And it hurts because where does that money come from? And that number is only going to increase as the mandates increase over the annually. So every year we're expected to spend and being told we have to spend more. Well, those dollars have to come from somewhere. And they're currently, we are funding it through the DPW budget. And it's a stretch and to do it and to continue to do it, because what does it affect? Well, it affects all the other things that come under the DPW. It affects roads. It affects everything, water to water. Everything that the DPW does, as we move forward with stormwater, what we're looking at, water and sewer, for example, water and sewer, we have a utility in place that takes care of water and sewer.
Right.
So those using water and sewer pay for water and sewer. Stormwater is a situation where everybody has stormwater and has stormwater issues, and it's pervious versus impervious. Amounts of or square footage on your property. You know, somebody that has a huge parking lot, obviously the parking lot is impervious, as well as the roof of the building is impervious. All of that square footage adds up. And what we're looking at is, how do we deal with this? And it was a lengthy, continued to be a lengthy discussion last night, where there is a feeling among some counselors that it should be just a flat fee across the board with everyone. One of the hard parts about that, for me, and again, I'm speaking for me now, I look at it and say, okay, somebody like the Franklin Village Mall, somebody like Bean College, or somebody like the other plaza down on the other end of town. Mm-hmm. You look at those pieces, and should they be the same as somebody who lives at 42 Maple Street? Should they pay the same rate? I'm having a hard time with that, because I don't believe they should. But that's my opinion. And there are going to be ongoing discussions. Right now, we're just trying to continue the process to get a utility in place that would allow us to do it. We're not trying to set any dollar numbers on them. Mm-hmm. Sure, is it coming? Is it a tax? Of course it's a tax. Everything is a tax in one way, shape, or form. A fee is a tax. You know, you can call it what it's a different name, but it's the same thing.
Yep.
So everybody has a piece of this. And I think what the administration has done and the DPW has done has brought something to the table that I believe is a fair overview of how we should handle it. As far as the fee goes, what that is, that's something that we can discuss down the road. What the EPA is looking for from us is to continue to put the necessary things in place to allow us to continue to pay for this, as we know we're going to have to do going forward. Do I like it? No. Okay. Did we try and fight it? Yes. And I'm sure that the public is not aware that we did sue the EPA, because this is all about rivers. And, the phosphorus from leaves flowing into the rivers, the salt from the roads getting into our rivers. And because we have a portion of the Charles River that comes through Franklin, it puts us in that basin, so to speak.
Yep. We're in their target zone.
Exactly.
Can't avoid that part.
No, you can't.
No. So while the conversation continues, clearly I think there's a bunch of links, and I'll include them in the show notes, but it's an unfunded mandate. We could charge it and determine how to pay for it in a couple of ways. To your point, we could continue as we have been with the operational budget, but that has inequity factors built into it, because any of the nonprofits, any of the government agencies don't even pay taxes. So while they may have, in Dean's case, or in the maintenance shed over by 495 and Grove Street, they have space, but they don't contribute anything towards the expense of the stormwater. As an alternative, kind of the usage-based utility fee is the proposal. So at least everybody pays to their share. So exactly. It's currently defined by square footage.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a better way to develop that, but the usage-based concept, at least I buy into that. That yeah. makes more sense. Otherwise, the flat fee, so I'm paying the same, whether it's $10 or $100, that Dean and or the government would pay, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Well, hence my point. So
right.
Again, I did cut off the discussion last night after a little over an hour, but it's going to be on future agendas. I'll bring it back onto an agenda probably in March or the beginning of April. Mm-hmm. We'll get more information. We try and get more information out to the public. And I just would ask the public to please read up on it. Try and get an understanding as to what we are trying to do and why we need to do this. Because if in fact we don't put a utility in place and do not fund it, those dollars have to come from somewhere.
Right.
And at some point, it's going to affect, it has to, and it will affect fire, police, schools.
Anything coming from that main tax bucket.
It coming from the main tax bucket in order to pay for it. And I don't believe in my heart that that's the right thing to do. As much as I hate another tax mm-hmm. or another fee.
Right.
We all hate that. But sometimes these are the tough decisions that councils have to make as to what is in the best interest of 34,000 people? And what is the fairest way to deal with it, 34,000 people? Yeah. And that's how we have to look at it. And that's obviously how I always try and vote when it comes time to vote on these things. Mm-hmm. But this is an ongoing subject. It's going to continue. It'll go on for probably another few months it gets at
before
least
before it comes
temporary.
To a vote and either goes up or
exactly.
down.
Exactly.
And if it's down, then it may not be the end of it anyway, but we'll see.
Exactly, Steve.
Yeah. And then at least in terms of last night, you did have one piece of legislation, which was really just the first reading moved to second reading around adjustment, which intended at this point to be kind of an annual look at the ambulance and fees that we charge to make sure we're competitive in the market.
Exactly. And this is something that our new fire chief, Chief McLaughlin, brought forward to the council last year, his first year in, where he had done a study from neighboring communities to see what, in fact, they were charging for ambulance rates and so forth. And he brought to the council last year a rather extensive fee setup for adjusting the fees that we were currently charging. Mm-hmm. It had been charging for a long time. And I think he made a good point last year, and he made it again last night, where if there's a mutual aid situation and we go to a neighboring town that charges a little less, we lose. So what he's tried to do with this and what his recommendation last year was to try and be in the middle, of our neighboring communities so that everything kind of stays on a normal track or an mm-hmm. average track. So what he did, what he brought forward last night was just a relook at some of those fees. Again, going back to these neighboring communities to see what the average or the mean was. And it had increased because, you know, we're not the only town that's looking at this. And
costs aren't increasing, right?
yeah.
Well, life is exactly. happening. Costs are changing all the time. So
they constantly are. And this is something that we're not trying to be on the high side. We're not trying to be on the low side. What we're trying to do is be in the middle and be as fair as and equitable as we can with our residents as well as our neighboring towns. Mm-hmm. So this is something that will come to the council annually. You may get some, may see some increases. They may be minor in some line items 1 year and different line items the next year. Not every community is looking at these on an annual basis. So what happens is sometimes you get big jumps and we're trying to avoid the big jumps.
Sure.
And so that we don't lose on mutual aid responses and we're kind of keeping in the normal thing. So yeah. I applaud the chief's efforts and keeping this on the forefront and trying to keep us right in the middle of the road here.
Yeah, I agree. And we've kind of used fair and fairness, equitability, equity in a number of, it's kind of been the thread for this conversation to a certain extent.
Yes, it has.
Which is, for there's sure. nothing wrong with that because clearly we do need to be mindful and aware and do what we can to, you know, create that kind of environment. Absolutely. And we probably shouldn't leave without at least touching upon one of the most dynamic topics, and was touched on certainly last night. And I know you're in conversation with our town administrator, Jamie Hell, on a regular basis around the vaccine process. So clearly just stay tuned. We're trying to do what we can, but it's an evolving situation.
It certainly is. And it's been very frustrating for me as a town leader to see how, I'm sorry for no other words, I believe that we've mismanaged the distribution of the vaccine within our state. I know it's something I talked with Jamie and Kathleen at the Board of Health twice a day and have for the last 2.5 months as we prepare for this. And we as a community are prepared. And that's the frustrating part. Right. We're so prepared.
We're ready.
We got the high school set up and approved by the state to be a vaccine site. We same thing with the senior center. We're now also looking at for shut-ins, maybe getting the state to allow us to transport the vaccine at a very, you know, in a very short time frame to deal with the few people that are, you know, can't get out.
Immobile, homebound,
however you want to say it. So we're just so prepared. And when I look and see the numbers, where there's, you know, and this is a couple of days old, but, you know, you're looking at over 1 million doses of vaccine that the state of Massachusetts has. And we've actually inoculated 510,000, just 51 or 52% of what we've been allocated and what we have in our refrigerators within the state.
Right.
Getting them out to the public. We're a better state than this.
Yeah, we should be.
You know, and it's frustrating to me to be in this situation when you look at other states that are doing the distribution differently. And I get this. But logistically, I think, you know, we could have done a better job. We're on it daily. I know Jamie feels the same way. You know, we feel the residents' frustration about the vaccine. I will say, and I said it last night at the meeting, I get on. I have a 92-year-old mother that lives with me, and we called last week and got online and got our appointment at Gillette, who's getting a very large amount of doses. They're getting over 10,000 doses weekly, and that's a wonderful thing. It's a great facility. Sure. They've done a great job preparing it, and I will tell you that you know, they tell you to go to the door 10 minutes before your scheduled appointment. My mother went to the door 5 minutes before. She walked in. She was out in 20 minutes, had her shot, had her card, had her appointment for the second shot. So once we get it, once the vaccine is there and we can get it into people's arms, we're in good shape. And our numbers are going down.
Yes.
Our numbers, not only locally, but statewide, are going down. Our 7-day average yesterday was 3.3%. What a one, you know,
there's and we're down.
No, and we were, you know, just over 9% a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's working.
Yeah.
We just wanted to work faster, Steve.
Yeah, yeah. No, it always was going to be
You can tell it's.
Oh, and I recognize that. I share it. I mean, I have a logistics background, and it was always going to be a supply and demand piece. We knew there was going to be a line, and some people are going to be at the end of the line, and even those that are in front of the line, everybody wants it now, and I understand that. Yeah. But it's frustrating. So we do have to be patient.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, while we're waiting, and even after we get the shot, do what we need to do, wear the mask, social distance, wash your hands, yada, yada, yada. And that keeps us at least healthy to wait
until we get our turn. Right. And I applaud the efforts of the town. I think our town has done a great job in doing the necessary things, the 6 feet apart, the large gatherings, the restaurants. You feel so bad for the restaurants. Over the last year and a half that just have really taken a direct hit. And the hotels, talk about
absolutely.
Taking direct hits, and they have. But they continue to try and move forward and do the things that they're allowed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I applaud their efforts. I applaud the community's efforts. It's very seldom you go anywhere where you don't see everybody in a mask. And that's a great thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
No.
We'll just be patient, wear a mask, be about social distance, and check periodically because, things are changing so rapidly. There will be a vaccine sometime, maybe sooner than later.
Yes, there will.
Well, thank you for taking time to review. So I think hopefully for the listeners, they've heard a little bit more about the inside of, what happened? What does it mean for me? And stay tuned because some of the discussions, whether vaccine or stormwater, they're going to go forward before we get a resolution ultimately. And in our factor, it should be more fair. That's one of the themes, at least, that we've come up with so far today. So,
okay, great. Well, thank you again for having me, Steve. I do look forward to these quarterbacking sessions. And I thank you for giving me a little shove to get these going.
Indeed. Thank you. It takes two to tango. So we're in the information sharing group. Absolutely.
Okay.
Thanks. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.